Hi there, I'm Juliet Nichols, founder and director of Pineapple Audio Production, and you're listening to the Podcasting Playbook. We're really lucky to be supported by some incredible businesses at Pineapple, so I just want to take a minute here to thank Ice Cool Design, a super stylish, eco-friendly wine cooler. We've got some beautiful Pineapple branded ones, and you can find pics of them on our Insta. And Audioboom, one of the leading podcast publishers who help you get your podcast to Apple, Spotify, and the rest. We use them for tons of our content distribution, so we are big, big fans. On today's episode, we are very excited to have Clay, the assistant editor at metro.co.uk, with us. She's previously worked at Fabulous Magazine and was a freelance journalist. Clay and I have worked together for a little while now on a variety of audio projects at Metro, from Smut Drop to Mentally Yours, to most recently a very exciting new series all about breast cancer. Hi, Clay. So would you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we will get on to today's topics.
Cool. I am the assistant editor, brackets, features director at metro.co.uk, and have been so, well, I've worked in sort of a few different guises there already, but have been working at Metro for about 3 years now.
We've worked together for probably all of that time, actually, Clay, but I know nothing about what you did before that. So what kind of happened in your career journey? How did you get started and how did you end up where you are now?
Oh my goodness. So I've been in journalism for, oh my God, over 30 years, which I know is very hard to believe. But I've worked in all sorts of places.
It's very impressive.
I know. I started my career in, well, my dad was a journalist. So I started, so I learned the ropes from him and I sort of did a bit of, you know, helping out in the office for him. Then into women's magazines, like Good Housekeeping, Prima. And I'm talking back in the 90s. And it was, you know, they were back then, I don't know what their stats are now because I don't keep up with it. Back then, they were like huge. They were both number one of their field. So it's a great learning curve and very, you know, female dominated workplaces. So that was awesome because I was like learning from lots of very strong women, you know, journalism and, you know, how to be team players, all that sort of stuff. So it was really good place to start in journalism, I would say. And then sort of from there, I went on to work, which is where I did most of my like sort of 15 odd years, was at News UK, where I started out back in the day on, it used to be known as Sunday Magazine for News of the World, and then got turned into Fabulous Magazine, which now comes out with Sun and Sunday. All that time basically has all been working in features because I love features. I love people. I love sharing stories. So that's sort of, that's everything I've done. And I did that for sort of, I stayed at sort of with, well, I was at the launch of Fabulous, which would be about 12, 13 years ago now. Could get that wrong. But yeah, and then sort of about in 2019, I took a tiny career break of like 6 months or something because I was just a bit sort of, you know, tired. And I had two children, which I never saw. And so I was just like, I just need to take 6 months off, hang out with them for a bit. And then sort of missing it quite a lot. My plan was to go freelance, but so did a bit of freelancing, but I realized that I sort of wanted to have to run a team, be part of a sort of like something, you know, permanently. So when the Metro job popped up, went for it, got it.
Good for you. And Fabulous Magazine, by the way, I've always
loved. It's a great magazine, great team.
It's a very cool magazine. Yeah, I love it. So when you're talking about features, what does that actually mean for your day to day being assistant editor?
Well, yeah, I was going to say features when you're a writer is so different from when you're assistant editor. And it's sort of like, it's almost like I get sort of FOMO and jealousy now because when you're, sorry, I've just touched my mic. When you're a writer, you get to chase the stories, speak to the people, do the interviews and have that one-on-one with case studies, which is amazing. And as the editor, the assistant editor and sort of features director, is like I can come up with a bazillion ideas and I sort of say, can we do this? And I edit the copy. So sort of help turn it, you know, speaking to writers, working with writers to turn it into amazing copy. We've got, on Metro, we've got amazing writers anyway, but it is that sort of just having, really just putting my two pence in worth because I just miss having that creative sort of aspect. And it is, what I do is still very creative, but it is in a different, you know, as it's that whole thing of sort of like the higher up you get sort of in the field you love is sort of the less you actually, especially in journalism, the less you actually do. But yeah, so for me, that's sort of like, it's on day to day, sort of just looking after the features, making sure we've got some really great features. At the weekends, we do In Focus, which is sort of the story behind the story. It'll be sort of quite newsy, maybe quite topical, but we do that every Saturday and Sunday. And we also have Snapshot, which is a picture-led piece. So it's something with a, it's a story that can be told through pictures. So it's very minimal words, which is, you know, for a features writer, but it's finding that story, being able to tell that story in a very succinct way and sort of conveying it. So those are sort of our regular, the regular features I do every week. And then it just depends what's happening in the week. It's like sometimes you can have a glut of a feature every single day because something topical's come up, or you can just sort of have one a week. But on top of that, there's like lots of other things like podcasts, campaigns, and just anything to sort of, you know, keep Metro, the name, the brand out there, sharing. Oh, and doing stuff with the newspaper as well. So I forget all that we do. We work across the newspaper as well. So it's sort of overseeing their features. So a bit busy.
Yeah, that's a huge variety of things to do. It really intrigues me that you took a career break and then, you know, it's very inspiring that you managed to come back in and you kind of like continued on with your career despite taking that 6 month break. And I know some people would be quite nervous to take that break. Did you see that as a big challenge, or have there been other challenges you've come across?
Interestingly, that came about, which is sort of talking about the challenges, that came about because my dad died, and I was so busy and I was so, you know, I was just, you know, I'd worked for a really long time and I also had two kids, and so trying to balance all that and everything else. And then this terrible thing happened. And it was like, you know what? I am so tired. I just need to have a break. And luckily for me, sort of they were offering voluntary redundancy at Fabulous. And they had turned me down a few times. And thank God, well, not thank God, because I was so sad to leave. I was really, really sad to leave, but I needed to do it. And so I just said, can I do this? And they said, yes. And, you know, it meant, because I've been there, it meant that I got sort of, you know, a decent package, and meant that I could take that time out without worrying, you know, financially for a little bit. So, and it, in my head, it was just, I'm a bit of a sort of like, everything will be okay type of person. But there will always be work for journalists, because stories, even with AI, stories still need to be told, and they need to be told properly. And you need to find the people to tell the stories and things like that. So there will always be work for journalists. And I think I've always believed that. So even when I sort of took the time off, I knew I'd be fine. I had built up so many contacts, and I knew that even if I couldn't, I mean, my plan was never to get another sort of desk job again. It was to work at home and be a, you know, be a freelance journalist. But I miss the sort of, I don't know. I mean, maybe the freelance journalists do it much better than I did, but I just miss that sort of being part of a sort of a permanent team and sort of having that sort of stability. It never worried me. I don't think it did. I think there was sort of perhaps if I had not found a job, then maybe. But I don't know anybody. I honestly don't know any of my colleagues that were former colleagues and friends gone into freelance journalism that have ever regretted it. So I'm just sort of like, I've got a good stable of people that have, you know, of support, but also that I know that it will be okay.
But I think that's quite inspiring. I think, you know, a lot of people would consider that quite a jump, quite a big move, and like, you know, not know where that's going to head. And I think some people do stay in their role for longer than they maybe want to because of that. So it's cool that you can be that inspiration.
Thank you. I just think it's that the whole thing is that, I mean, I probably stayed, I think because I love my job so much and I love the people so much, and I probably stayed in it sort of, for me, probably too long, but I didn't want to go. And also probably was just like, oh, too scared. But at the same time, it's just like life is, and it's so cliche, but life is just like such an adventure. And so it's always just, I always sort of, if there's something that you think you should do, just do it. Because it's just like, you know, you don't know where it's going to go and all the rest of it. And it's really, you know, it's very easy for me to say that in a job where there is possibilities. But it was just like, you have to do it or else, you know, you regret it.
Yeah, you sometimes have those like life is too short moments, and maybe the sadder moments in life as well send you there.
It was that sort of like, you know, if I don't do it now, if I don't have the opportunity to do it now, then I probably won't get the opportunity for a very long time. So, and it was just like, and it is, as you say, it was a very sad thing that sort of spurred it all and made it happen. But it was sort of like in the long run, it worked out well for me.
Yeah, it's a catalyst for change sometimes, isn't it? So if those things were maybe less challenging and positive, are there challenges that you have come across that you would be willing to share?
I mean, every day is a challenge. I mean, I've always had like really strong female role models within the industry. I've always had worked with lots of women. And so it is, in that sense, that's been really brilliant and totally beneficial for me, because it's like, I don't see that I can't do anything because I'm a woman. And I think in journalism, it doesn't matter anyway. But there's the behind the scene things, like being a working parent. I had my kids in the sort of the 2006, 2010, which it wasn't actually that long ago, but it was still, it was much more difficult. And I think it probably still is very difficult for people starting out with families now, but it was very difficult in terms of there wasn't a lot of understanding with flexibility, and you basically didn't pretend. And it's not because of the, I want to make it really clear, it's not because of the people I work with, because they were all brilliant, but it was just sort of this unsaid thing that you just, you know, children did not get in your way of your career. And it was like, and to be fair, it's because I was starting out in a time where it was, you know, the generation before me probably was the same as well. It's like they're starting to be full time, you know, where you didn't have a choice, that you, I mean, you have a mortgage to pay. So you have to, I mean, you're lucky if you've got a job you love to pay that mortgage, but you don't have a choice. You have to work. So it's that sort of, there's no choice in that sense. So you have to do it, but you have to also do it and not let your children get in the way, which, you know, it is good in a way, because it's, you know, you need to be focused in what you do. But things like, I was telling somebody about this the other day, doctor's appointments. Rather than say that you had a doctor appointment for your child, I would say it was for me, because I didn't want anybody to think that my child was stopping me from doing my job. And it, maybe it was a thing that I put on myself, or maybe, but I think it was just the general how society was, you know, or the working environment was, not just in journalism, but in so many jobs, and probably still is for a lot of jobs, which is really sad. The awful one that I still remember, because I remember being an anonymous case study for somebody in an article, this was many years ago, they're talking about sort of the juggle, which is just ridiculous because it's more than a juggle, it's a bloody nightmare, of your nursery shuts at 6 o'clock, but you finish at 5 o'clock, and then you have to literally sprint out the door. And that's if you're lucky enough to only work an hour away. Now I work even more away, but away from where you need to get to. If a tube, you know, if a tube is not going properly, or your train's cancelled, and it is literally the heart of just, you know, you literally think you're going to have an ulcer because it's awful. And, you know, and the nursery at the end, they're lovely and all the rest of it, but they're a business and they have to get their homes to go to. And if I'm late, they're late. So sometimes you'd come home and they would be, they were always really good. And obviously they never just left them in the nursery by themselves with the lights off. But sometimes they would be sat outside, all of the team, not just my children, but with their backpacks on and stuff like that. And you just think, that's really shit. Can I swear? It's like, you just think, that's really rubbish. And it's, you worry about the impact that has on your kids as well. Now, I don't care, in the sense that actually it's really good for them to see, this is what modern life is like. This is what, you know, some mums are lucky to, you know, if they want to stay home and have that opportunity to be at home with their children. For a long time, I think it was really difficult, especially just in that, I think in that era when everybody was sort of still finding their feet with working women and how it works, how it impacts the workplace. And, you know, now we have more paternal rights, which makes it easier. And again, I say we have more paternal rights. We have a smidgen of more paternal rights, which makes it easier. It's not fair on dads either. I'm not sort of saying it's them being useless, but it's that sort of thing. It's just, you know, it has got better, but there's still loads more we can do.
Yeah. It's really inspiring that you have managed and do manage to do both things. And I've thought for years and years, when I was working in the radio station, I'd be in the office and I think, how are these people here at 8:30, having done all the things they've already done, leaving at 5:30 and still got all the things that they've got to do and holding it together? And like you say, not necessarily letting those things
in. You're not really holding it together. It's just like, literally, I've got to stress, it's not just people with children, it's people who have anybody else to care for in their lives, which is generally everybody has somebody or some other thing going on in their life. So it's just like, that's just my example, because that's my experience. But it's like, you've got people who have to care for parents, care for partners, you know, and or are the main breadwinners. It's like, there's so many different things. And it's just, and it is really silly, but it is, the pandemic, as awful as it was, because it changed how we worked, it's changed so much for the better for a lot of people.
I agree. The flexibility.
Yeah. And showed people that they can do their job from home.
Yeah. And also shown us all how much, like, things like doctor's appointments and health in my opinion, become 50%, 100% more important to everybody off the back of that, I think.
Yeah.
It's so much more acceptable now to say, I've got to go and do this thing for my wellness, my health, the importance of that, versus pre that, we probably wouldn't have seen it in quite the
same. Exactly. And it's like, it's what's interesting, because I say it's sort of with the working from home, is like that with my job, actually, it's much better. It's easier to do not working from home. It's better being in the office because you talk and you do all these things. And it's much more collaborative. I mean, it's nice working from home sometimes, obviously rolling out of bed, going straight to the thing. And if you want to edit or do something where you don't want to be bothered, it's awesome. But I think generally terms in a creative way, it's being with people and not via Zoom is so much, it's so much more beneficial. But what the pandemic did do is show that if you need to take time off, or if you need to have your children around and work at the same time, which is never good, you know, it's never good because it's a pain in the bum, or they're a pain in the bum, but it's like, but you can do it, and you just work around them. You find solutions. And that's what we were having to do, because our kids, you know, weren't in school, or, you know, you literally had to find a way to make sure you still got your work done and your children had some semblance of normality education. And, you know, not sure my children did, but, you know, we still got stories out, and so it just shows that you can do it. And I think that was a real eye opener.
Yeah. The meshing of like professional and personal lives was a major thing, wasn't it, out of that time?
What was quite interesting about the pandemic was that I'd only been in my job I started in the January and it hit in the March. So it was like, it was a real sort of baptism fire starting at Metro and sort of doing most of it. For a good, I think 6 months we were definitely at home, and then it was on and off, wasn't it, after that? But yeah, so it was very interesting way to work.
So your dad clearly was a kind of influence in the journalism side of your career. Audio wise, how did audio start coming into your sphere? So podcasts were brought into your role first at Metro, or did you have any audio related content before that?
I think we always talked. And I still haven't done it. I want to do one, and I don't know. I've got so many ideas for them. And I think I used to sort of say, can we do, when I was at sort of somewhere else, I'd say, can we do one? And we would look into it. And it wasn't as booming as it is now. And then joined Metro. And then it was just one of these things that we sort of, I hope you'll agree, is sort of like I help get things done. And so it's that sort of like, so I think they were just like, right, let's give it to her. She's a doer. And so basically I had no experience when I joined Metro other than having ideas for them.
But now you're very much involved in a couple of different podcasts, but the majority of the one we pretty much work on, Smut Drop, together, and a very exciting new podcast, which we'll launch soon. So what's your experience been like recently? What's your experience been like of being part of that production process? Because you are really quite involved.
I don't know if it's like I'm too involved or whatever in the sense, because I'm a sort of like, I think it's the editor in me. I'm a control freak. I like to know that what we're doing is the best it can be. And it's like, I always say, it's like, I trust everybody to do it. But it's almost like, again, like I say, that thing, it's like, I just need to double check. It's just more so that I've got some, you know, so I'm just checking. Yeah. But I'm just, so it is, it's like, so in terms of sort of like with you guys, I love that sort of, you know, I can send you guest ideas, but you also have a massive list of your own guests and things like that, which is brilliant. And you like keep me up to date with who we've got coming up and all that sort of stuff. So it's brilliant in that sense. I love that it's sort of like Smut Drop is very much sort of like the ball keeps rolling with it, and I can just dip in and out. But sort of like, you know, as you know, on a weekly basis, I give it a listen just to check some bits and bobs, and you know, and it's more for me, it's more just checking sort of legalities and things like that, and just sort of, people forget is that, you know, we are a website and we produce articles, hundreds of them every day, and for something to have more ears, eyes, anything on it, the more platforms we can hit, the better. So it's like, we have, like, as you know, the social, we get, make sure that something goes out on social every week, and we get some sort of article with it. And whether that's like just literally a write around about what the episode's going to be about, or, you know, a subject that we've done similarly.
Yeah. It's amazing to have that kind of like 360 on a podcast, and it's not you know, it depends obviously who's making the podcast, but to have Metro involved and you guys behind it so much makes a big difference to where the podcast gets to and who's listening. And it's amazing to have that kind of support. So SmutDrop's been going for years and years and years now in various guises. So obviously it's doing something, but what is it, do you think, from like a Metro point of view, podcasts give? Is it that like extra level? Is it that extra option for people to find Metro and come into those articles, or are there other things?
So it's a conduit, you know, for the people who might be looking for one thing, then they sort of stumble across Metro and it's like, oh, you know, let's find out more from Metro. I think, say, with SmutDrop, it's very much, and Mentally Yours, which is one of the other podcasts, which I don't look after, and My Platform as well, which is another podcast we do with you guys. Obviously, they're all very representative of the brand, and Metro is has a really, it sounds silly, but its USP is very sort of inclusive, giving people voices, that sort of thing. So it would seem bonkers not to go do it that way as well. So we literally sort of, obviously we do a lot, you know, we tell straight news, and sometimes we tell very funny news, or we could tell the alternative news, or, but you know, our modus operandi is to be a voice for people and to share stories, and to share stories of people who don't normally share stories. And so a podcast just seems like a really, really natural way to do that, whether that's a, you know, to do with, you know, has a sex angle or sex relationships angle or a mental health angle, or just, you know, an opinion-y thing, which is the sort of My Platform. The only reason why I sort of like, I like to mention those as well, is because obviously I oversee lifestyle and I oversee the platform section. So even though I'm not directly linked, I've still got my fingers in those little pies. So it is that sort of like, so I'm very proud of all of them, even if I'm not part of them directly. Metro is obviously an online news site, but we have the paper, which we QR in a lot. So we can send a lot of people back to the website, but also we QR every so often our podcasts. So it's sort of sharing them with our readers that way. And then sort of we have such a strong social and video team. So it's like we like to tell stories and news and all those things in so many different guises. So podcasts has to be part of that as well, surely.
Yeah. I mean, we are loving working with you guys in so many different ways, and definitely on the newer kind of series we've worked on, like My Platform, having some of your team, you know, presenting, having, you know, Rachel on there and Jess on there presenting and sharing their stories, but in a kind of different way, in this audio way, has been a real pleasure, because they are so passionate about what they do. And like you say, about sharing the voices of people who maybe we wouldn't hear their stories otherwise. My Platform's a great example of that.
What's really nice about My Platform is that, and again, with Mentally Yours as well, but it's just because My Platform is so new, is that whenever, and it could be wrong, but whenever we've shared, so they're all, just to give a little explainer, they're all old story, and you know this obviously, but they're all stories we've already done, but then we get the case study in to tell a bit more about the story. And so to get it on the site, to give it sort of like a home on the site, we just share the original piece that went out, you know, 6 months ago, 2 years ago, but obviously with the link in. Every time we've done that with a historic story, it's got so many, you know, views and clicks, because it's such a great story anyway. But it's just, you know, it's just retelling that story again. And it's so good to see that these are still stories that resonate with people. And so whether that's because it's, you know, the podcast, or whether we're just telling again, but it's just like, it's just really interesting that we've already told that story, but we're sharing it again because of the podcast, and people still want to know about it.
Well, Clay, thank you so much. We'll always end this podcast by asking you a little bit about what you may have learned, or what you would pass on to someone who's aspiring to do some of the many, many amazing and varied things that you've done. Is there one, or we could give you two, if there's two important lessons that you would be able to share?
Yeah, I have two. First one, but just be nice to everybody. Not be nice to everybody, but just be nice. It's just like, it doesn't hurt. Just be nice, you know, and not sort of like be a pushover nice, but just be nice. Is, you know, you could be a ball breaker if you want to, but you generally don't get the best out of people if you're screaming and shouting at them. So try and be nice. It's like, you can be firm but fair, but, you know, that's what I always just think. It's just like, there's no need to, you know, let somebody else be a dick. So you don't have to be.
Okay, by that.
And because also, I suppose it's like, it's not really 2 points, but it is that whole thing of, you don't know who's going to be coming up. And so if you haven't shared courtesy towards somebody in the industry, And like, not everybody deserves it. So you don't have to be nice to everybody, but you don't have to be a div to everybody either. But yeah, it's just like when you're going down and they're coming up, it's just, it makes life. And maybe that's why I've done all right, is because I've sort of generally been quite nice to work with. And I suppose the second one is enjoy your job and realize that it sounds so stupid, but it is hard work. It is a job. It is hard work. So is it, I think anybody that goes into journalism and thinks it's just going to be really easy ride, it's not. It is really hard work. But I think most journalists love it, and that's what makes it really enjoyable. So it's like, just go into journalism not thinking it's sort of all Sex in the City or, you know, whatever. I can't think of any sort of really good journalism. The Bold Type is a really good one at the minute, isn't it? The Bold Type sort of shows.
Oh, I love that
it.
Show.
But it's still, yeah. I watch it and I'm just like, oh, bless you all. You know, it's not like that.
Oh, they don't wear those shoes every day.
Well, do you know what? I've worked in a women's magazines and I've met editors like that. And, you know, it is quite glam. Or that's what I mean, is journalism these days is not like that. It was in the 90s, but it's not so much. But it is that sort of like, it's really hard graft. And it's that whole, it does take time. So it's like, you won't get everything. Like, as you know, it's like I've been working 30 years and sort of like I'm, you know, and it's taken its time to get to where I'm at, but it's sort of like, I've learned so much along the way. And so I know I'm doing my job to the best. I probably can learn a lot more actually, but I'm doing it as best as I can right now because I've worked so hard and learned so much. You have to work really, really hard, but it's a nice working hard, I think.
Thank you, Claire. I really appreciate it. And I can confirm you're definitely a very positive and lovely person to work with. And that does make a big difference. It does make a big difference. The energy you put out, you certainly get back, even from the more challenging people in the world, right? So yes, thank you very much, Claire. Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Claire, for being our guest on the Podcasting Playbook today. And thank you for tuning in and getting to know a little more about the work we do at Pineapple. Don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes coming your way soon. Bye for now.